Get ready for two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Dave Palumbo, John Romano. RxMuscle.com presents Heavy Muscle Radio. Watch out, this hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Heavy Muscle Radio. I'm John Romano, and I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Dave Palumbo. Dave, I know we're not supposed to talk about the weather, but I just have to tell you.
I'm not mentioning that there's no weather talk. Sorry.
I did freeze my ass off.
I don't care.
Walking over to your house today.
Am I going to get, I think I'm going to get like guilt trips about the weather until the summer comes again.
Exactly, because I'm going to be complaining incessantly about this. My eyes were tearing on the way over here. I was, the car passed me and some lady asked if I was okay.
Well, you know what? The truth of the matter is that I believe that it's unseasonably cold right now. It'll probably warm up again.
So just in time for it to get cold again.
I was in Atlanta 2 weeks ago as a stopover. It was 97 degrees there. Then I was there this past week on Thursday and Friday, and it was 50 degrees. So it's unseasonably. It's trust me.
No, my friend called me from Florida. It was 96.
Well, Florida is always warm. Well, I saw Kenny Jones at the Brooklyn show last
hey,
night.
Hey, Kenny, where is he now?
He's living
I'm
up
right here
now.
John, it's great to see you. How you doing? You know, it's been a long time, but you still look good, Mr. John.
Kenny Jones moved back here. I said, I thought you loved it there, Romano told me. He's like, Romano doesn't know what he's talking about. I told him, he knows I hate the humidity down here.
He said he was moving to California.
You see, I had a client in the show. She did really good, took second place. It's the truth.
No, Kenny Jones told me that he hates the humidity down there, which could possibly mean that he owes someone money down there. I don't know.
Last I talked to him, and we were training at the same gym down there, down at the zoo in Fort Lauderdale, he told me he was moving to California. He bought this gigantic bus camper thing for like $250,000.
Right.
And he was going to live in it and drive to California.
I don't think Kenny Jones has so much $50,000 to buy a camper.
He was selling his 1978 Cadillac.
For what, $500?
And I don't know. I think he wanted more than that. But and that was it. He was getting rid of everything and going to Cali's. And I hadn't seen him after that. So I figured he went to Cali. But what? He's up here now.
No. Well, I don't know. Do you know who Oren is? Oren Silver. Oren Silver is the guy who blew my backyard up with the fireworks.
Yes.
Oren Silver, works backstage at all these shows. So I was at the MPC Brooklyn this past weekend because I emceed the show, and we'll talk about that a little later. And backstage, Kenny Jones was there, putting some tanning stuff on one of his clients, I guess.
Right.
Before I realized it was even Kenny Jones, I see Oren yelling at this guy, trying to tell him how to put tanning stuff on. He's like, you're putting too much stuff on this person. I'm telling you, you're putting too much stuff. And I look and it's Kenny Jones.
Oh,
I'm like,
man. Tell him what to do.
So Kenny's ignoring him. And then he's like, no, really, you put, less is better with that. And Kenny just goes ballistic on him. He's like, I'm an IFBB pro. I've been doing this for 30 years. You got to tell me how much tanning shit to put on. I wrote the book on this stuff. And now Oren's like, well, I know better. I'm around this every weekend. And so I could tell that Kenny was going to wind up punching him in the face. So I was like, Kenny Jones, holy mackerel, the one and only Kenny Jones, what are you doing in New York? And that's when he told me that he...
The only problem with Kenny Jones is that he's lethal. And he's a double black belt and, you know, two things.
I wouldn't mess with Kenny Jones. I believe he is lethal.
He's lethal, and he's a wiry, strong little fuck. I mean, I was at a club one day, and he took 10 guys out.
Did he really?
10.
Wow.
And I paid for dinner when I was done taking them out.
your Kenny Jones impression, Jeff, is a little too Derek Anthony-ish.
Too Derek.
No, see, fucking Derek Anthony's down here. Kenny Jones is up here, Dave.
You need to spend some time with Kenny.
I did spend time with Kenny. He was training at my gym in Dolphin, and I'm going to tell the fucking story again. Saw me curling the 55-pound dumbbells.
Right.
Comes up to me, goes, hey, kid, you're doing it all wrong. I'm an IFBB pro. Exactly what Dave said. And he couldn't even lift it. Okay?
Oh, really?
Then he showed me his legs.
So. I thought you were going to tell us that he's the one who taught you how to curl the 100-pound dumbbells.
No, he actually taught me how to curl the 30s.
Oh, the 30s?
Yeah.
Did he give you the right technique, though?
Oh, of course. Are you kidding me? I mean, look at my biceps now.
Yeah. Speaking of your biceps, how's the training for the ultimate curling contest going?
Jimmy gave
Battle
me some...
Battle of the biceps.
Well,
Battle of
you
biceps.
Know, I've been consulting Jimmy. I didn't really train with him yet because, you know, our schedules are kind of messed up because of what happened on the weekend with the show. But right. he has been like telling me what to do in terms of, you know, certain standing positions and how to like grab the dumbbell to get a couple of extra reps. So I think things are working out.
Well, for anyone who's been in, living under a rock, Jeff will be participating on Friday the 13th of November in the Battle of the Biceps, Bros versus the Pros, against Michael Liberatore for $1,000 cash. And Jimmy Pelletier and Jeff, who were enemies a few weeks ago, are now training partners, so to speak. And Jimmy is going to be coaching you and helping to improve your technique, I understand.
That's right. I mean, you know, the guy curled the 150, so why not?
Yeah, you know, he's got some good curling technique. And we're gonna be videoing that for RX Muscle 24/7. You know, up-to-date Jeff and Jimmy footage so we can see what's going on. We may have to get someone down there in Louisville, Kentucky to film Liberatore, too, to see what he's been doing.
Yeah.
Because we want to see how he's training and what's his mental state of mind going into this challenge, because it is going to be one for the ages, John.
Well, you know, the second one for the ages is not technically a Bros versus Pros rendition of our new variety show, but Derek Anthony and I got into a scrap on the website over the course of the last week.
That would be Hoes versus Schmoes.
Hoes versus Schmoes, something like that. And now we are obliged to compete against each other in a calf liftoff.
Calf liftoff or calf pose down?
Both.
Okay. So you're going to actually test who's stronger?
Who's stronger and who looks better? And of course, you know, and I don't know what he puts in his calves, but mine are completely devoid of anything other than sinewy, solid, veiny muscle.
You see, you still fucking talk shit when I'm not in the fucking room, John. This is your fucking problem. You're going to cause me to do another 20 fucking posts on the same topic.
Yeah, John, you and Derek were going at it on the boards the other night. Yeah. Huh?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you know, Derek has you know, a fuse that is so unbelievably short that, you know, when we first started out, we were joking around.
He was texting. I was in Atlanta, and he kept texting me, John and I having a ball on the boards.
We were like throwing insults at each other. It was like, and then, you know, he said he was going to bed. I went to, you know, I signed off. I was doing something else. Next thing you know, he's like back on. He's, you know, going out of his mind. So we fixed that.
Okay. Yeah, you guys made up.
We're doing a calf contest.
All right. So whoever wins the battle of the calves has bragging rights.
Is that you don't know the...
No, what are the stakes?
Whoever fucking wins gets to bang Juliana. That's what happens.
In Derek's dreams. No. If Derek wins, I have to dress up like a girl and he has to take me to lunch.
Okay.
If I win... The talk on the board is not that he has to dress up like a girl, but he has to leave the boards all completely.
Why doesn't he just get him to shave his head or something like that? That would probably be better, wouldn't it?
I guess, yeah. We'll think of something else. I don't want Derek to go anywhere.
Nah.
I like him on the boards.
He might enjoy you dressing up as a girl, though.
That's what I was worried about, you know? I'm thinking, you know, there's been a lot of inferences to, you know, that kind of...
Derek's a straight guy. Yeah. That's not going to be a problem.
Derek's straight. I didn't think he was going in for cross dressing, but it will bother me an awful lot if I have to wear women's clothing and go out to lunch with him.
I'm going to videotape the whole thing, of course.
So. And I don't know if it would bother me yet more if I had to go out to lunch with him dressed as a woman.
Well, let me ask you this question: who's going to be the judge and determine who's got the better calves and the strongest calves?
Oh, you are.
I am. But what's the method of the measuring?
I mean, the obviously. The weight that we lift is going to be...
Well, are you
going to
do calf presses?
I think we should do three moves. I think we should do seated. I think we should do standing. And I think we should do like a donkey kind of calf raise.
But how many reps do you have to do with the weight?
I think we should just go for like the biggest weight, like a powerlifting meet.
Well, I think probably the purest of the calf movements would be... I don't know, maybe something like, because you can cheat, you can bounce. It's like really hard to measure a rep. We're going to have to get Pelletier in here.
Yeah, Pelletier will have to come in.
Maybe like a standing calf press to see who can do
standing
the most.
Standing would be good, or donkeys. Donkeys are good.
Yeah, donkeys you can kind of cheat with your back, though. I think the standing will probably be the best measure.
All right, we'll do standing. Seated are good, too. Those are impossible to cheat on.
Yeah, that's true. But
even if you bounce it, I mean, it's still... True. It's the amount, you know, it's just like doing a cheat curl. I mean, if you're going to cheat doing curls, you can cheat doing calves either way.
Yeah.
I think we should do a combination of lifts and single rep max versus reps. Because calves are an interesting muscle.
So he's actually saying his calves are strong too. They're functional as well as they look good.
That is what he is implying. All right.
We'll have to see. Okay. I don't know. When are we going to do this thing?
We're going to back down on the hype right now and wait for Jeff and Mike to get done. All right. I don't want to take any of their thunder away, but I think right after they do their thing, plus Derek has to quote unquote recuperate. So I don't know what that means.
And the contest after that will be a wrist curling competition between Dave Palumbo and Diego. Because when I hold the stick, it's very good for the extensors.
We could have him do a pinch grip contest between Ron Norman and Diego.
I would like to pinch Ron Norman for free.
That's pretty bad.
Ron claims he had the pinch grip world record for a number of years. Yeah. You have to grab the 45 pound plate. They have the ones they have the lip
with the hub in the middle. Yeah.
He used to grip.
Actually, I don't know if he could do that, but I knew this kid back in Gold's back in the day. His name was Chuck Perez. Chuck Perez dissected a frog in biology class in 10th grade and decided right then and there that that's what he wanted his legs to look like.
Right.
And he became a gym rat. And lo and behold, his legs looked almost exactly like a frog's legs. I think he had some kind of retarded vertical jump. He was like 4'8" and he could vertical jump, 11 feet or some crazy.
Wow.
He was amazingly gifted, in strength. And part of his genesis, he became a very wealthy guy, designing and building late night infomercial exercise equipment. But back in the day when he was a poor slob like the rest of us, he worked at Gold's Gym putting the weights away.
Right.
And he decided that he was going to be able at some point grab a 45 pound plate by the hub with one hand and lift it up. And every day that he worked putting those weights away, that's what he would do. He would grab that 45 by the hub in the middle and try lifting it up. And eventually, he got to be able to do it. He lifted a 45-pound plate off the floor, up and over his head with one hand, and then he quit.
Well, Ron Norman did it with more than just the 45. He had other plates piled on there. You got to ask him. He had he did have the official world record for a while, but he said it's been beaten since then. But speaking of vertical jumps and dunking basketballs, I was down in Atlanta this Thursday and Friday covering filming Trey Brewer, for about 36 hours and doing some training stuff with him and lifestyle stuff. And did you know Trey Brewer can dunk a basketball?
No way.
Yep.
Did you see him do it?
No, but we didn't want him to get injured. His father told me, though, he can dunk it. But actually, his father, who's only about 5'6", 5'7", dunks a basketball.
No kidding.
And, Trey can do it. But, because he's dieting for a show, I don't want him to injure himself or anything like that.
Now, how's Trey looking?
He's looking good. He's freaky looking. I got to tell you, when he did his arm workout and we were videoing him, and Sean was holding the camera and I was watching, and he took his shirt off and he had like a cutoff shirt on.
Right.
My jaw hit the ground. I mean, really freaky looking arms.
Wow.
And that was a body part that wasn't always that strong for him. He showed me his legs real quick too, and they're looking pretty freaky. His back looked like it came up. So, I mean, this guy could be dangerous at that Nationals. I don't be surprised if he emerges victorious. And this guy has got a tenacity about him. He does not like to lose.
Yeah. No, he doesn't.
You're going to find out a lot about him when we put this lifestyle video up. But this is a guy who was the homecoming king at his high school.
Right.
He's a big football player there. He played soccer. He was a track and field guy before that. I mean, this is a guy who's been a competitive athlete his whole life, and he doesn't like to lose. And he doesn't usually lose.
No, he doesn't. And when he won the Excalibur back a couple of years ago, we all thought, this guy's going to be the next great big thing. And then he probably got some bad advice or whatever, doing his diet now. Who's doing his diet now?
He's working with Hani, but from what he told me was, I think he just got a little too heavy in the off season last time, and he went up to like 330 pounds or something like that, which is
crazy.
way too much weight. But the kid's a hard worker; he'll do anything you tell him to do. He's really, really focused. He stayed very lean this year, much leaner than he has in the past. He's about 260 now, and he's looking pretty close to contest shape. So I think we're gonna see good things for this guy, and we're gonna put up a lot of coverage of this guy. We're gonna have him on the radio. we'll have up his three of his workouts, and we'll have a nice lifestyle. That we had some funny stuff happen. I don't want to even share it because I don't want to give it away. But when it comes out, I'll tell you some of the full stories about what went on.
Did you guys go out to eat?
Oh yeah. I mean, Trey's a machine. First of all, he has all his food prepared, and he's one of these guys that doesn't put anything on it. He'll just eat it plain.
Oh yeah,
it's just. He doesn't need anything on it. He'll eat, you know, plain fish. He'll eat plain sweet potatoes, plain rice, you know.
Jay Cutler style.
I don't know what it is. He just is like, it's not important. It's a mission for him. He doesn't
food is fuel.
Pleasure. Right, exactly. And look, you got to take your hat off to the guy. The guy is, you know, he's very focused. And he just turned 24. He's still a young guy, but he's enormous. I mean, he's facing off against Steve Kuklo, who he's kind of friendly with now. But, you know, Kuklo beat him at the Teen Nationals back in 2005 in that heavyweight class, and he beat him again last year at the Nationals. Kuklo was third and Trey was fifth, and I know Trey wants to beat him. He's not admitting it, you know, because, you know, of course he said he wants to beat him, but I think deep down he's dying to get revenge on this kid, you know.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure more than anything he wants his pro card.
Yeah, that's what he said. He goes, look, I don't care who I beat. I just want to beat everyone. You know?
Right, so, exactly.
Look, he's got his work cut out for him. He's got some good guys in that class. Besides Kuklo, you got Robert Bernanke, who we just put up a crazy arm training video that we shot in Vegas. I mean, this guy is an absolute freak. He's got 24-inch arms. He's going to be facing off against him. That's going to be tough. You got Malcolm Marshall. Well, I'm helping out a little bit. He's another big, big, freaky guy. And, you know, the super heavies seem to be the mass monsters are back, you know, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems to be, you know. We're going to be getting some bigger, badder guys coming along in the pros pretty soon. I mean, we got Zach Kahn just won his pro card over in Britain today.
Yeah, and I don't know how you pulled it off, John, but we got him on the show a little later.
Yeah, he'll be on the show.
Hours after getting that pro card, so that's going to be really exciting. And, you know, he's one of the people that everyone on the boards is always talking about as being one of the freakiest new guys out on the block, so to speak.
Yeah, he's got a teeny tiny little waist, and he's just massively huge. His condition was always, you know, his nemesis, and apparently, from what I heard in the pictures I saw coming over from the other side of the pond today, he's really put it together. He beat some bigger guys, some nastier looking guys, and he won the super heavies and the overall, and he now has the coveted IFBB pro card.
You know, it seems funny when you look at Zach Kahn's, you know, persona and what he looks like, having won the British championships, and then you think back a couple of years, was it 2 years ago, Flex Lewis won the same show, the overall. I mean, the discrepancy in size is almost astronomical, you know.
Well, you know, that's the kind of conundrum that 202 class, you know, puts out there. You know, the guys that were never relevant before the 202s came along, now they are. And you can have, you know, a guy like Flex Lewis, you know, busting out of the British, you know, in the British pro card, the British pros.
Yeah, but he actually beat all the big guys.
He did.
The British championship. That's what I'm saying.
He won his weight class, then he beat him in the overall. Yeah, so very interesting. I don't, like, what I'm saying is I don't think, I mean, how many times going back has, you know, a middleweight or a lightweight or you know, a smaller guy really won the overall and then did anything with it?
Yeah. Well, we'll have to find out. I'm sure once we have Zach Kahn on the radio show, I'm sure Blackman will probably sign into a contract.
We're pulling for everybody out there. Everybody knows that as soon as we get some guy on the line that you're going to get paid.
But. Well, he's a big freaky guy, so I wouldn't doubt it. I got a funny airport story. You know, everyone knows I've been emailing me, John, about my airport stories. But, you know, and I'm always traveling, so I have plenty of them. And just when I think I can't outdo the week before, I noticed something else that just drives me crazy, and I'm convinced that I see all these things because they're meant for radio material, you know.
And you're looking for them.
I'm not looking for them. I'm really not, because these two things that happened to me this past weekend I was not looking for. Right. Number one, I walked into the bathroom in Atlanta when I was getting ready, and I was heading back to New York. I had to go to the bathroom, and there's a guy in there, John, shaving. And not with an electric razor. He's got his face with the shaving cream on it. He's shaving in the freaking bathroom. I mean, that's like Mr. G style. You know, Mr. G does that like in gym bathrooms because he doesn't have a house, you know, he lives in.
Mr. G shaves?
Sometimes. Oh.
Occasionally.
Takes a shower.
Well, now to that guy's defense, here's the scenario all that right. I think he was doing, okay? Right. He flew in from BFE somewhere, bumfuck Egypt, and he was on a long flight. And he got landed, and he was coming here to the States to meet his future wife's parents, and he wanted to make a good impression, so he brought his clothes with him on the plane. He took a gazillion-hour flight. He decided to stop, because first impressions are very important. He stopped in the bathroom to change his clothes and shave and freshen up so that he looked all nice for his future in-laws.
Okay, that's a great scenario. Now, here's my conundrum, John, because this is where the whole problem I'm having
fell apart.
This
right?
is where my whole problem was with figuring out about the whole shaving thing. How the fuck did he get the can of shaving cream through security? They won't even let you bring peanut butter through the freaking.
That's interesting.
Right? Think about it, because he hadn't picked up his luggage yet. He was in the actual terminal.
Right. Well, he could have bought it at one of the snooze shops.
Do you think they sell shaving cream?
I think so. Don't they sell a travel size? Aren't you allowed a 3-ounce travel size?
Not of liquids. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, and it goes in the plastic bag on the outside.
Where did you ever find a three-ounce?
Three and a half. They have those travel shaving creams. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I think it's disgusting. You shouldn't be shaving your freaking face in this thing. You know what? But what's more disgusting...
I think you shouldn't be taking a shit in one of those public toilets when you smell like, you know, Godzilla died in your lower colon.
That's everyone in the bathroom. But look, you got to take a shit. But you can hold off on the shaving till you get home.
You know, what if you had a job interview? Right, I could see a relevant point for shaving in the bathroom.
All right. Well, I can't. But
was his luggage like, you know, hefty bags?
No, he wasn't like David Paul. I don't think he was. I kind of got disgusted by it. I just walked out. I had to go tell Sean about it. But when we landed in New York, I went to go to the bathroom, and I saw something that was even worse. And this is still disturbing me to this day. You know. I used to see this in college too, but you know, at least that's in college when you live in a dorm, the bathroom is kind of like your bathroom at home, even though you're sharing it with like 10 other guys. This guy was blowing his nose in the sink. You ever see this? When they hold one nostril
snot
rocket it into the sink? I mean, right in front of, there was like 20 people in the bathroom, God. And he's like, and cleaning each nostril, and then picking his nose to make sure he didn't miss anything, and blowing it into the sink. I mean, that's disgusting.
Oh, man.
Of course, in New York, they wouldn't do that in Atlanta. Atlanta, they just shave. But, you know, New York, they blow their fucking nose in the sink.
You know where you see really gross stuff like that is in Mexico.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
Well, that's Mexico. That's why.
It's just, you know, my buddy Scott and I took a road trip. We drove from Guadalajara to I don't know where. But we were in the middle of absolute freaking nowhere. And at a rest stop, and the buses stop there, you know, let everybody use the bathroom. And, you know, there's a sort of hierarchy there that, you know, is sort of unspoken. I mean, if you're a maid and you're waiting online to go to the bathroom, if some, you know, woman pulls up in a Mercedes, she's cutting in front of you, and there's no two ways about it.
Fair enough.
That's just the way it is there. But, you know, the more poor people in Mexico, very bad plumbing. So their custom is to take a shit and then wipe their ass and throw the toilet paper in the garbage can.
Oh, my God. Nasty.
So you go in.
I think Mr. G does that, too.
It's 400 degrees outside on this particular day in the middle of nowhere in the dusty plains of central Mexico. And we stop the car. We go in. And of course, we cut the line and go in. And there's this garbage can that was the central garbage can where apparently they dump all the smaller garbage cans into. No. And it's like 100 degrees in there. And the flies and the stench and the just no. It was like I had to leave immediately. All of a sudden
was it like liquid ass?
It was do you know what? They may have bottled liquid ass in that very
that's
room.
Where they made it, yeah.
You know, that really is fucking disgusting.
It's horrible. Think of the health, the horribleness
well,
of it.
That's why in the Middle East they don't use toilet paper. They just wash their ass with a hose. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when you go into the toilet, there's no toilet paper. There's a little, like, you know how you have in your kitchen sink that little spray thing?
Oh, really?
You hose off your ass, and then that's and you get that take the stuff off of there. There's no toilet paper.
I thought that's what a bidet was for.
No, this is not a bidet. This is how they... In the Middle East, they don't use toilet paper unless you're in like a hotel, like where they have touristy hotel. Like you go to a gym there, like a real gym, there's a hose. You spray your ass, you wipe it with your left hand because you eat with your right hand, and then you wash your hands after that you're done.
Yeah, that's why when they catch you stealing, they chop off one of your hands, and then you become an outcast because they know you're eating with the same hand you're shitting with.
I have one more question.
Tough about rules over there.
I got one more question about airports and planes, and then I'm going to go on because I don't want to belittle this too badly. Although I did run into a celebrity on the plane.
Yeah, we saw that.
Yeah, I took a picture with him, Ted Danson, one of my favorite actors back from Cheers days, and now I watch him on Curb Your Enthusiasm. He was there with his wife, Mary Steenburgen, Sean had no idea who Mary Steenburgen was.
Did he know who Ted Danson was?
He didn't recognize him, though.
Well, he had white hair.
Yeah, but I would recognize him even if I didn't watch Curb Your Enthusiasm and know he had white hair. He looks exactly the same, I mean, facially.
Completely.
You know, what was with when he dated Whoopi Goldberg, though?
He married Whoopi Goldberg.
I know. Mary Steenburgen's a pretty girl, and I'm sure he got major ass before that. You know?
Oh, yeah. Whoopi Goldberg is like a guy.
I don't know what that was all about. I think
she's
lost
like
his
a
mind.
Dude. I mean, you ever watch her on The View in the morning? I mean,
she's horrendous, I know.
If there is a show that will instantly turn my stomach faster than rancid chicken, it is The View.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a bunch of whiny, nasty women bitching about something.
And they all hate each other.
And they all hate each other's guts.
When I was on the Conan O'Brien show, the guy who used to put the Hulk makeup on for me, the green makeup, used to do Barbara Walters' makeup, and he told me that she was the nastiest bitch. I said, really? He's like, so condescending and sarcastic and
arrogant.
He said it was terrible.
Well, Whoopi is a perfect fit for that freaking show.
Well, she may be a nice woman, but she's certainly nothing to look at, you know.
But even her ideals and her motive and her everything is just so whacked.
So I wanted to take a picture with Ted Danson because I figured, you know, I actually wanted to interview him, but I figured he would think like I was, you know, trying to be like a paparazzi or something like that,
right.
Even though I technically am. So I said, Sean, I want you to hold the camera and I want you to follow me. Stay right close to me because it's the way these guys work. If you don't nail them right away, they're going to say no.
Right.
They're not going to wait for you to pull the camera out because then other people are going to come over. So every time I walked over to Ted Danson, I looked around and Sean wasn't around. Like, he's one of these people that's embarrassed. He gets embarrassed to do these things, but he doesn't understand this is how you get pictures. You got to be a little aggressive. You're not going to get him. You know, once you get him, he's all talking up a storm about how great it was. But I said, Sean, get your ass and stay near me. So I went over to Ted Danson and I said, you know, I'm a fan of your work. I said, you know, mind if you take a picture with me? He's like, and then I said, my photographer's right there. And when we took the picture and we got it.
He looked like he was deciding to say no.
I think he was. But you know what? You got to put him right on you got to put him right, you know, right on the mark.
That's good. That's good for your collection. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, I think, you know.
Did you guys talk at all?
No, I would have liked it because I really do like him. But I thought it was rude because he was there with his wife and her daughter. Mm. And, you know, he was obviously trying to keep to himself because he was afraid. No one even knew who he was because afterwards, when I took the picture, some woman came up to me, two people actually, and said, who is that you took a picture with? And when I said Ted Danson, they were all like, oh, I should have asked him for a picture. So I got away with it because no one recognized
him. Now, Mary Steenburgen is, in her own right, a great actress.
Yeah, she was great. I tried to tell Sean, I figured, he would recognize her as being in Back to the Future Part 3, but he didn't even know that movie.
More sophomoric film.
Yeah.
He's young yet.
So
you didn't want to get a picture taken with her?
I thought at that point it was pushing my luck, but actually when I walked out to the where we had our car parked, they were out there, and I had my second opportunity to try to grab a picture, but at that point I got Ted, and I thought, you know what, they're going to think I'm like a stalker or something like that, so I backed off. Yeah.
Well, technically we are.
Yeah, technically, but you know, we're a site. We got to get those paparazzi pictures up there.
I like the thread you made about the McLaren F1.
You like
video.
That? That's one of my favorite cars that I'll never ever own. Well, I shouldn't say I'll never own, that I haven't owned yet. You know,
the chances are you won't because there's only like seven of them. So.
Yeah, there's not that many
left. Yeah, there's not that many.
Probably by the time I can afford it, it probably won't even be that great a car anymore. But watching that video, man, and listening to the sound of that engine hum was music to my ears.
Well, that's a BMW V12 in that.
Yeah,
that car.
And I'm a BMW fan at heart, I gotta tell you.
So, Dave, you know, you asked the question if anyone would trade their girlfriend for that car.
Right.
Would you trade Abby or Bella for that car?
No, definitely not. I trade you for the car, though.
Well, you don't owe me, thank God, and I'm not your bitch, so either way, you lose.
You know, that's an interesting conundrum. You're faced with owning, like, a $4 million car that I would imagine tune-ups are probably $100,000 in
probably,
that thing.
Probably, yeah.
You know, and you know, that what an indecent proposal. You know, here I have a McLaren F1 for you, or you know, and a Pagini to Zonda, or Ascari, you know, A10, or any of those exotic, you know, $1 million-plus cars, $600,000 to $800,000.
You know what I love about John? He knows how to pronounce the name of all these cars. I know all the cars, but I pronounce them all absolutely wrong. You know, all their names.
That's, well, you know. You have to fantasize deeper.
Oh, okay.
That's why. So, you know, what an indecent proposal. You know, being faced with the car and giving up your girlfriend.
What would you do, John?
It depends on who your girlfriend is.
Hold on, he paused a while there. Hold on.
It depends on the car.
It depends on how long you've been dating the girl, Jeff. If you're not that attached, then you know it might be worth to get a car.
I think it depends on the car, really. I mean, honestly.
What kind of car would like move you to actually do it?
Oh man, I don't know. I don't know. I guess at that point it depends on. I don't know. Be any one of those that I posted. Probably the Jambala Mirage. Based on the Carrera GT.
Cool.
Yeah, that's that's a sick fucking Porsche.
That's a $450,000 upgrade on top of the $400,000 car.
But did you see in that video the McLaren when it just passed the Porsche 911 Turbo like it was standing still? That's what I really...
You know, that's really unfortunate because the McLaren is not that much faster than a stock 911. Although
when it's moving, it is.
When it's moving, it is, exactly, because it's so light.
Yeah.
But you know, those and a 911 Turbo is a tank. It's very heavy. But you know, the breathed on 911 GT2s are putting out, you know, 750, 800 horsepower.
Wow.
And they are brutally fast. So,
but these are stock cars we're talking about. Exactly. McLaren was stock. It wasn't aftermarket, you know, tuned.
Well, you know, technically it is an aftermarket car because it's not technically a production car.
Well, it is. It was.
Well, it was. Not when it had a limited run. I mean, I think they made 1,000 of them.
Yeah, that's a run,
I guess.
I have one more question. Let's leave the cars because we may not have too many car fans on the board.
Are you kidding? How can you not be a musclehead and not be into muscle cars?
I'm into cars, but you know, other people, when you can't afford them, you're not always as into them as you should be.
Yeah, but you can always afford something. I mean, you know, you can make a Honda go fast.
That's true. Jeff has a Dodge Neon.
You know what? I would be interested. I want everybody that's listening to this to post on a thread, and I want to know if everybody is not interested in cars. I will bet you that the majority of our listeners have some sort of passion for cars.
All right, well, maybe they could post what their favorite car is, too.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, now, John, what's the farting protocol on a plane?
You're not supposed to fart.
All right, well, let's say you're in a row of three people, okay? I personally think, because this happened to me this past weekend, that if you have to fart and you have two strangers sitting next to you on each side, that you should have to tell them. It should be your obligation to fess up that you are going to fart or that you just farted, rather than to everyone to look at each other and wonder who it is. Don't you think that there should be some kind of protocol for farting?
Well, I was on a bus one time a long time ago, and a lady sat next to me and asked if she smoked. That's when you're smoking.
Yeah, well, I would say no to that.
And my response was, do you mind if I fart? Mm-hmm. And she left. She vacated the seat. Oh. So apparently it is a more egregious act than smoking to fart in public. Uh-huh. I would have gotten up and used the restroom and not told anybody.
What if it just like it's got to cut? And sometimes there's people that just let it out. They don't care.
Really?
And then they're like, you know.
But yeah, but then what do you say after you say, well, it was me?
I think Jeff and I were on a plane where there was a guy farting that it was just like nonstop. Every like 10 minutes, just another bomb went off.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that was a Vegas flight, no? the first one.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, it was. I don't
disgusting.
Know. Disgusting. It was. Did you call him on it? We didn't know who it was.
There was
stand up and say hey.
It was like one of those like smart stealth. Smart like farts that like just they don't it releases but it doesn't go off right away.
Oh, you know? Delayed reaction fart.
Yeah, those are dangerous.
I mean, okay, so in your scenario, you're sitting next to two strange people. You got a fart and you tell them. What do you offer mints?
No.
What do you do next?
I guess you can't pre-warn them, but if it comes out, you got to say sorry, buddy. You know, yeah, I would at least fess up to it so that like at least the woman next to me doesn't look like you. People don't think that she did it. You know. Unless she did do it.
Unless she did do it.
Yeah. Girls do fart.
Yeah, I know.
And theoretically, if they did fart, it wouldn't smell. But
you know what?
Real life is different.
Women don't fart that much because they'll control themselves. But when they have like a bad gas problem, it's vicious.
You know what? And when they're little, my little daughter Danielle was about three or four years old. I think she was four. And she had a wicked stomach flu.
Oh, boy.
That she had just gotten over, but the gas was, the digestive aspect of it was still there. And I had to go to the store with her and do some, get her a couple things for school. And I'm standing in, Sears or Gap or wherever we were. And there was the counter. It was one of those island counters, you know, in the middle of the store, and there were people all over the place. There was at least 15 women there, you know, paying for stuff or returning things, and my cute little daughter lets one go that smelled like a cross between sauerkraut and rotten eggs. And she's standing there with her hands in her pocket, you know, minding her own business.
They thought it was you?
Of course they thought it was me. How could something so foul come out of something so cute and little? Of course it was me. Then what do I do? I'm going to blame my daughter? And so it's like, oh, Danny, that was terrible. How did you do that? That would have made it worse. I had to sit there and take it.
So you should have just fessed up and said, I'm sorry, guys. You know, you should have taken one for the team.
Oh, it was brutal, man. I remember my nose hairs curling. Poor little thing.
Yeah, girls, when they get sick like that, I think it can pass something in there. The estrogen in their body does something to it.
That, and plus I think the girls habitually, you know, don't go. I mean, they like save it up. I don't know why.
We know people like that.
Ooh, I know.
No
not
names
all
mentioned.
Of them are women.
Yeah. No, we know people like that who are women, though, too.
I know, yeah.
No names mentioned. No,
I'll mention my ex, Max's mother.
Oh, she was bad?
She would brag about the fact that, I only go about once a week.
Oh.
Wow, let me know so I can be out of the state that day, will you?
Jesus. Well, moving on to some greener pastures.
We always talk about shit. Why? Yeah, what is the matter with us?
The show, it degenerates always down to the bottom line. The brutal, bare essentials of human nature,
shit. Eating, shitting, and training.
Right, exactly. Well, this past weekend, we had a lot of contests, John, we covered. I mentioned earlier that I was at the NPC Brooklyn Grand Prix, where Jason Myers won the overall there. I interviewed him. He's up on the RX Muscle site. Very nice guy. Believe it or not, he goes to the University of Pennsylvania, so he's a smart guy. And he actually was a cheerleader there, just like Mike Liberatore was down in Louisville.
Really?
So that was a good show. Matt Bristol ran that show. He's a promoter, and I emceed it. And it went off without a hitch, very smoothly. Victor Martinez guest posed. We did a little interview with him afterwards. It's up on the RX Muscle website, and he revealed that he will not be doing the Arnold this year, John. He's going to be waiting for the Olympia.
Wow.
You think that's a good idea?
Yes, I think that's a great idea for him because, he needs to bring those legs back. And, no one's going to forget about Victor Martinez in a year. So I think taking the year and getting over his personal trials, and if he can put a year with his nose to the grindstone and get his legs back up to where they were, and from the looks of him on stage last night, he's well on his way.
Yeah, his legs came up, and you know what he told me? He's been training that weaker leg every single day.
Wow.
Extra sets. So he's intent on getting that thing back to what it was. And I also agree. I think it's a good idea for him not to diet right again and to take off the time and come back, for the Olympia. Look, he's a guy who beat Jay Cutler. You know, he may not have gotten the win, but he really beat him as far as everyone else is concerned.
That's right.
He's thinking to himself, hey, Chase on top again. If I beat him already, you know, if I come in again at my best, you know, I should be able to beat him again. So I think Victor's not out of the picture. I think that it's a matter of whether he can put the hard work in and he can have a year without any kind of drama in his life. Obviously, it's his sister passing away, being murdered, I should say, this summer definitely hampered his contest prep. He admitted it last night when I talked to him. Yeah. And I think we're going to see a much, much better Victor Martinez come next year.
I do too.
Moving on, we also covered the IFBB Border States Pro Figure Show, where Felicia Romero wins, gets another win under her belt, requalifying for the Olympia. Christy Taudy was second, and Chrissy Chin third. So those Chrissy Chin, one of our RX Muscle Divas here, yeah, she requalifies for the Olympia for next year. So that's great for those girls. The NPC Border States, the amateur division, was won by Rich Piana. All those pictures and results are up at RXMuscle.com. I want to thank Ralph DeHaan for shooting that show for us. Good old Ralph.
Good old Ralph.
Start working with him again. I really like him and know him from years. I know you know him probably longer than I do.
Long time.
He's a biker, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a good old California boy. You know, he's he's the kind of guy that wears flip flops and shorts like all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
my kind of guy.
Your kind of guy, exactly.
But he's like one of those, back in the day, like Peter Fonda riding on those bikes.
Oh yeah, he was back. Of course he was. And San Diego all the way. He's just a good Southern California guy.
He's got a great house, I remember. I remember he has his photo studio in this like basement, but it's like below the basement. It's like he lives in like a mountain. It's like a trap door.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't even go down there, to tell you the truth.
Really?
It's a trap door with like a ladder. It's like almost like it's like an attic in reverse. And you got to walk down this real ladder. It's real small. I remember at the time I was out at his house, this was in the 90s, I was like 300 pounds. I'm like, there's no way you're getting me into that, because you could be buried alive in that thing and you'd never get out. There's no escape from that. But yeah, he's got a great house. It's I don't know if he's still in the house, but
the one in San Diego.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the way just, to San Diego.
Yeah, it was, what is that, that place called?
Escondido or something like that.
It's even a better place. It's got a better name.
No, he wasn't in La Jolla, though.
Yeah, La Jolla.
He was in La Jolla.
Yeah, La Jolla.
Maybe it was La Jolla.
I remember I was out there right after the, what was that, the storm that washed away all the beaches there?
No, I don't know.
It's got a name. El Nino?
Oh, El Nino.
El Nino.
Yeah. But those are recurring storms.
Yeah,
but
that was a big El Nino I think they had over there.
El Gran Nino.
You know, something like that. Anyway, Border States went off without a hitch. Thank you, John Lindsay, for giving us the press passes. The IFBB World Amateur Women's Championships, John, took place in Italy this past weekend. We will have all those results. They're on their way, and all the pictures up at rxmuscle.com exclusively. And I'm excited. One of my girls that I helped, Brigitte Brezhevec, took second. It was really close. I thought she probably should have deserved the win, but, you know, the show was a great show. That's one of these shows that never really gets covered. But, you know, this is the World Amateur Championships. It used to be called the Miss Universe.
Right.
And, you know, these are the best bodybuilders in the world. This would be, you know, analogous to, I guess, the NPC Nationals, except it includes the whole world, aside from, you know, we send a team there, but we don't really send our best people there, usually. So that's another big show.
And then why don't we send our best people?
Because they have to pass a drug test.
What are you saying, Dave?
I'm saying they got to pass a drug test. That's all I'm saying. Now, all the winners of the Team Universe go to the World Championships. That's how it works. Right.
Okay.
Now, the Southeast, NPC Southeast Florida also took place this past weekend, and I think John Hawley, or Muscle Papa from the show, from the boards, covered that one. So we got a lot of shows up this past weekend, and, you know, we're trying to increase our contest coverage exponentially every weekend, and I think right now we're pretty much the destination place for photos, John.
Yeah, we're exclusive number one. Exclusive.
Well, we got a great show tonight. We got Dr. Scott Connolly back talking about how to live a million years.
And if you're not going to live a million years, live the years you're living in high style.
That's right. We also have Zach Connon, new IFBB pro from the United Kingdom. John, we got to take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll have our first guest.
Hand me that Progenics.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on rxmuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenix protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenixSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenix product.
When the world crumbles around you, will you be ready to fight back? Brutal Alchemy Performance Nutrition's unique line of supplements will help you win the war in the gym. Ancient Strength is a unique blend of 3 creatine esters which will infuse you with the ancient strength needed for the battle at hand. Isolation is a pure whey protein isolate that provides 26 grams of protein in every 29 gram scoop. Attack NO2 is Brutal Alchemy's nitric oxide booster that will increase your pumps and performance. After your battle in the gym, it's time for Onslaught, Brutal Alchemy's comprehensive post-workout drink, providing everything you need to suffuse your muscles, joints, and body with the components to heal, grow stronger, and return to the fray. And when it's time to conquer in the bedroom, you'll need Forged Steel, Brutal Alchemy's male enhancement product. Lead the charge to BrutalAlchemy.com to obtain the essential elements of your brutal transformation. Brutal Alchemy. It's better to be a member of the Horde than to be destroyed by it. German American Technologies. Compete harder with GAT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. Jet Fuel, GAT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder.
TeamGAT.com.
Who are the Iron Sirens? The heroes. Susie Curry, Adela Garcia, Jenny Lynn, Crystal Richardson. Who are the Dark Divas? Gina Aliotti as Diva X, Jen Gates as Shade, Liza Kamstra as Black Lotus, Sonia Gonzalez as Raptress, and their story is told only in Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens is a one-of-a-kind, limited-edition comic book series and is the brainchild of J.M. Mannion. Order your copy of Iron Sirens today before they're gone. Visit IronSirensComics.com. That's IronSirensComics.com to get your copy of Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens.
RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hi, this is Lou Ferrigno of Incredible Hulk. You are listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Colombo. And keep listening, the best show on the air.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
All right, John, our next guest is a very good friend of ours. He's back again. We got some interesting new nutritional topics to talk about. So let's not waste any time. I'd like to introduce Dr. Scott Connolly. Welcome back.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Doc.
Hey, Scott. Now, I sent you a little article about maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, and there was a study that came out that showed that supposedly eating a low-protein diet will lead to longer life, insinuating that if you eat a high-protein diet, you're going to die younger. I know that kind of irked you a little bit, and I wanted to just talk about it a little bit because I know a lot of the people on the RX Muscle forums were talking about this and debating it. What's your take on that?
Well, the article was interesting to me because it really exemplifies what I consider to be a core misrepresentation of this whole anti-aging landscape. The premise of all of this stuff, you know, defaults back to an observation that is really not new. It's really 75 years old that in, you know, rodents and in lower life forms, deliberate restriction of dietary energy without quote-unquote malnutrition, which is a key distinguishing feature that exactly. Nobody seems to, you know, to focus on, that caloric restriction with adequate, you know, essential nutrient will actually increase lifespan of, you know, anywhere from, you know, simple organisms like fruit flies to earthworms, and then more complex organisms, the most frequently studied being rodents, mice, and rats.
Right.
And recently, this has kind of, you know, reached a zenith of public interest because some of the aspects at the molecular level that are postulated to control this extension of lifespan are capable of being reproduced by what are called, diet restriction mimetics, or chemical compounds that mirror at the molecular level some of the more profound changes that are seen with, you know, absolute restriction of dietary energy absent malnutrition. And again, I want to keep emphasizing that all of these studies that have looked at, you know, various degrees of caloric restriction, the average default being 40% reduction from what is called ad libitum, or, you know, spontaneous food seeking and consumption,
right,
are associated with very distinct, you know, facets of the animal's physiology. It's not just, you know, that their average or maximum lifespan is extended. It's that several aspects of their physiologic integration are demonstrably altered in a highly adaptive and coordinated way, which, you know, essentially leads to the question, is it really, you know, absolute calorie restriction or manipulation of nutrient energy to find a sort of minimum set point that allows all of the life-sustaining, you know, processes to go forward unimpeded and not develop pathologic conditions? Or is it really, you know, the finite control of a few essential molecular signaling pathways that can be, you know, essentially targeted not only by just restriction of dietary nutrient and hence by default calories, but also by other manipulations within the composition of the diet that could, you know, ostensibly bring about the same thing? And the core distinction, you know, really needs to start at, you know, definitions. And in fact, I have argued in other, you know, public forums where I've been allowed to participate in the discussion that, you know, the entire market-driven focus now of just, quote-unquote, you know, live to be 190 or whatever it is, is really, you know, something that I find, you know, terribly egregious, because there is no indication whatsoever that there is any genetic or dietary or lifestyle, you know, or pharmacologic manipulation on hand or in the for the foreseeable future that can actually delay aging, because there are actually two dimensions to aging. One is physiologic or sort of genetic manipulated aging of tissue and cell function, and the other is the impact upon, you know, the quote absolute lifespan by exogenous environmental influences. Obviously the most important of one in this discussion is the diet. And when we look to a corollary of, you know, the so-called, you know, life extension, you know, paradigm in a naturally occurring population, the best example, you know, extant at this present time is the Okinawans. Okinawans on average, you know, if you looked at time, you know, sensitive cycles for mortality rates, Okinawans compared to Americans between the ages of, say, 60 and 65 years of age, have a 50% lower death rate.
Wow.
And basically, the actual cause of death in any circumstance relative to an identifiable cause of death, for example, whether it's due to the number one, number two, or number three killers of Americans, which are heart disease, cancer, and stroke, the death rates of these Okinawans when they finally do kick off is, you know, not related to those quote unquote chronic diseases to the tune of, you know, 40% reductions in each category.
Wow.
So it sort of begs the question, are these sort of marketing fusillades that are now out there now really even approaching credibility when they say, you know, you can extend life and mitigate, you know, cancer and heart disease and so forth? That argument presupposes that there are, in fact, age-related diseases that are naturally occurring. And the fact of the matter is, and the Okinawans are a willing testament to this, is that there aren't age-related diseases, chronic diseases. There are lifestyle-related chronic diseases that happen to impact lifespan, because these particular maladies, you know, heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes, etc., are essentially not good for organ function.
What do you think it is about the Okinawans? Their diet?
Yeah, it's obviously their diet. And the fact of the matter is, and an important point is, if you actually, again, pay attention to the circumstances that bring about these observations in animals, with the focus on this is reduction in calories absent malnutrition. So the key is absent malnutrition, and the Okinawan's diet, the staples are essentially, you know, fish, soy, seaweed, and other plants as their, you know, protein and carbohydrate sources respectively, and they have a, you know, a modest fruit consumption and a modest grain consumption. But if you look at their diet with respect to the macronutrient compositional issues, it approaches what, you know, is talked about in the literature that discusses ancestral diets. And of course there is no one ancestral diet, because humans, you know, evolved over millions of years in radically different climactic regions that supported either robust plant carbohydrate or zero plant carbohydrate. South Sea Islanders and, you know, Eskimos had no access to plant carbohydrate on a regular basis, and yet they evolved and survived and flourished, just as people who developed in Northern Europe or Africa or some of the more heavily, you know, foliated areas of the planet. So the characteristics of those diets, absent any specific identification of a miracle foodstuff, was their macronutrient distribution, with roughly equal amounts of carbohydrate, you know, largely plant-based, and protein, and the rest as fat. And even within the fat category, there was a distribution of fatty acid composition that, you know, was more omega-3 and less N6 and so forth and so on. So it's really the qualitative aspects of the diet, not its absolute energy delivery, that is really speaking to these issues of molecular modifications that end up in increasing average and maximum lifespan in all of these organisms that have been studied in explicit detail. And from the standpoint of you know, looking even further, again, the drill down here is that if you really look at that literature very carefully, you immediately come to the conclusion that the common things that people associate with, you know, calorie restriction, i.e., you know, body fat and absolute numbers of calories from this, that, or the other thing, are really not necessary and sufficient for bringing about these observed enhancement in lifespan. It's really, again, the molecular adaptations that those particular attributes produce that are necessary and sufficient. And in fact, with the advent of some of these small molecule mimickers of agents that activate these important pathways, it's actually now been shown you could at least reproduce the molecular, physiologic, and translational and genome-wide translational aspects of these calorie restriction plans in the absence of calorie restriction. So really, this whole issue is important to me because it outlines my central, you know, rant that people pay attention to the wrong things 100% of the time.
Well, how much of the diet is related, let's use the Okinawans as an example, to longevity? Because, you know, 400 years ago, pretty much across the board, as far as humanity goes, you, Dave, and I would all be dead now of old age. So for the Okinawans now to be exhibiting this profound longevity in terms of an age group that is 50% less likely to die than an Eastern population, how much of that effect is diet and how much of that effect is just technology and evolution?
Well, obviously, Okinawans, you know, especially in the last, you know, century, have benefited from all of the sort of major, you know, quote-unquote societal and medicinal advances that have taken huge chunks out of the mortality statistics for humans. When we think, you know, back 100 years ago, average lifespan was like in the mid to late 40s, and, you know, to this day has advanced to the late 70s. And a great deal of that has, in fact, been induced by, for example, reductions in infant mortality or a big chunk of that. The development of antibiotics is a huge chunk of that. Improved medical care across the board so that people who are, you know, would ordinarily 100 years ago experience life-ending trauma can now be salvaged if they can get, you know, to a modern trauma center. And in fact, even aspects of diseases that are related to just simple, you know, earlier diagnosis, in the case of heart disease, for example, are responsible for a large part of the increase in lifespan. So if you take all those things as a backdrop default and then see that the Okinawans still, after all those factors have been considered, have the largest percentage of people attaining 100 years of age or greater, you know, obviously there's not a lot left except the diet to account for that. And again, remember that absolute lifespan is not really the interesting metric here, because Okinawans, you know, the oldest living human was a lady in France who attained an age of 122, and no Okinawan has gotten there. So it underscores, again, a commonality of all the animal experiments, that there's a lot of overgeneralization about the magnitude of the effect. In some of the more profound studies, only a third of the mammals under scrutiny get these, you know, kickers of 30%+ increase in maximum lifespan. The rest of them don't make it. But, you know, again, my opening comment was that to me this is sort of an issue that begs the question of credibility, because no one is going to propose to me ever that they have something that, you know, defies death. I mean, even these animals that live 30% longer, a large fraction of them die with no observable, quote-unquote, cause of death.
Right.
And that simply means that your body has a clock that, you know, times out. And the question for me is not the absolute length of time that it takes to time out, but how functional you are right during the period that it's still ticking.
Quality over quantity.
Exactly.
Right.
And that is never going to be, you know, a specious or irrelevant argument. I mean, right, you know, absolute life extension Could it be attained in humans? Well, you know, possibly, but at what cost?
Well, let's look at bodybuilding. When you ask at what cost, let's look at bodybuilding for a minute. Would a typical bodybuilder diet that maximizes, you know, muscle, all the extra food that we have to eat, would that really be antithetical to living a long life, or are the two mutually exclusive?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and probably that deserves an entire, you know, other discussion on a future show. The mechanisms that have been purported, you know, to essentially explain this enhanced lifestyle are essentially, they fall into basically four categories. The most common espoused mechanism, and actually the one that has the most empirical support for it, is what I'll call neuroendocrine modulation. And that is that what is really being examined here is the extreme for which organisms can sense energy and adapt to energy deficiency in different time periods. So in other words, there are mechanisms that exist, that have existed, you know, since the beginning of life on Earth, including, you know, in the most simple of organisms, like a yeast, for example. There are molecular mechanisms that are, in, you know, incredibly refined in their ability to sense nutrient energy availability. And the focus of that sort of molecular discovery pathway has really shone a spotlight on this calorie restriction thing, because obviously there are circumstances all the time, especially in an evolutionary perspective, where any organism could not be assured from a design sense that they would have continuous supply to nutrients. There are obviously periods that are unpredictable in both, you know, frequency and duration, where nutrient energy is simply not available. It's zero. So the presence of a sensing mechanism that can, you know, acutely sense nutrient deficiency and then produce downstream signaling that makes all kinds of adjustments to make amends for that and actually keep everything going from the standpoint of what I call somatic maintenance. There are issues that are irretrievable with respect to the amount of ass-kicking cells can put up with and not become devitalized. So as an emergency response system, these neuroendocrine modulations fall in line very quickly as a cascade of downstream molecules signal various tissues to, you know, adapt to a no-energy state. The ultimate, you know, example of this is hibernators. You know, I mean, hibernators do this in an incredibly precise and perfect way. And hibernation is just one extreme example of the same kinds of energy sensing and adaptive responses that are perceived to be important in life extension. So we immediately can take a look at the big hitters there. And the number one hitter is the number one regulator of energy partitioning, and that's insulin.
You know, Dr. I just have a question, because I just struck me as fancy. I once had this question before. Maybe you can answer. If you took an animal that normally would hibernate, okay, over the winter, and you didn't allow it to hibernate because you had it in a warm climate or whatever in a zoo, do those animals live longer or do they live less?
No one has ever done the lifespan study in a hibernator, to my knowledge. The small mammals that have been examined, you know, with excruciating detail are all, you know, mice and rodents. I don't know of a single lifespan study where they've actually looked at hibernators either with or without allowing them to undergo their circannual, you know, biorhythm or not. That would be an interesting question, because obviously the hibernator is a classic example of how easy it is to produce a sliding scale of insulin sensitivity and resistance and manipulate, you know, body fat levels primarily and, you know, energy driven, you know, systems as a secondary mechanism under the most egregious circumstance you could imagine. I mean, you know, protracted fasting at a core temperature approaching 0 degrees is a pretty miraculous set of like feat.
Right.
But, you know, the neuroendocrine thing, especially as it regards the insulin IGF-1 signaling cascade, has received the most attention and has the most support. The next sort of category is in terms of the elaboration of inflammatory molecules that are, you know, liberated in response to deficient regulation in the face of overnutrition. And again, one of the key concepts here is that in organisms that, you know, sort of, you know, give high praise to glucose as the preeminent energy or proton donor in the electron transport chain, insulin is the boss. And so, in essence, any system that is keyed in on providing glucose no matter what, including hibernating animals, have to have an infinitely sensitive insulin switch. And therefore, there are systems in place developed by classical Darwinian selection pressures that minimize the impact of too little glucose in the system. Mm-hmm. There are no mechanisms existing that deal effectively with too much glucose in the system. And all of the adaptations that accrue following consistently high deliveries of dietary glucose and the corresponding hyperinsulinemic responses to that are pathologic.
So you're saying that too much glucose in the system is probably what's shortening our lifespan.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the distinction that's clear-cut is overnutrition can embody malnutrition at the same time. Wow. It's very easy to envision a system that essentially is spending all of its time trying to regulate around an abnormality of nutrient delivery, and at the same time not getting access to the essential nutrients that make things run at high efficiency.
See, what you're saying is, with regard to John's question about the bodybuilders, is if bodybuilding diet is hyper productive or has too much glucose in it, or glucose based, you know, carbohydrates, that's going to be detrimental to living a long life.
Well, you know, the thing that correlates apparently pretty well with respect to all these things is a diet that produces low inflammation. And clearly a diet that attenuates insulin responsiveness, insulin levels, and the downstream consequences of those things would be consistent with a diet that provides signals that attenuate inflammatory responses. And inflammation is kind of considered to be the core effector of all of these abnormal, you know, circumstances relative to insulin and its derangement. And, you know, there's good evidence for that. All of these, you know, processes at some point, you know, involve a very focused effect of abnormal pools of lipid that upon oxidation deliver ceramide molecules, which are incredibly pro-inflammatory. Mm-hmm. And the atherosclerotic plaque lesion of, you know, cardiovascular disease is a very prime example of how, you know, that inflammatory response cascade in conjunction with a structural, you know, issue of depositing, you know, macrophages and stuff on top of this inflammatory heap can produce, you know, significant and lethal more you know, pathology.
Yeah, so to say to someone, take this resveratrol supplement and think you're going to live longer while you're eating tons of all the wrong foods and, you know, have hyperlipidemia and all these other insulin resistance, it's ridiculous, in other words, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's absolutely horseshit. You know, basically, you know, the resveratrol impact is on ostensibly one of the key signaling molecules that's called a sirtuin. And the sirtuin molecules are, you know, essentially present in yeast in very primitive forms. The archetypical molecule in the yeast is a sirt2 molecule that in advanced, you know, life forms like mammals and humans has become what's called a sirt1. Cytokine. And that particular molecule feeds forward into a system that has access to these key molecular effectors that interpret energy supply and make, you know, appropriate adaptations relative to that. The key one being what is called the mammalian target of rapamycin. That article that you sent me, Dave, had reference to a compound called 4-EBP, I believe, or
something like that.
That was one of the 4-EBP is what's called a translation repressor molecule. When gene products are activated, that's a process that's described by transcription. And those gene products then to turn into functioning proteins that determine cell physiology have to go through a secondary process known as translation. And translation is essentially a factory that assembles on a platform known as ribosomes proteins that eventually are elongated, stabilized, and released as functional proteins. That whole sequence is called protein translation. And translation can be speeded up, it can be slowed down, it can be inhibited, it can be, you know, enhanced by different molecular influences. And one of the ways of slowing it down is by what's called repressor molecules. And 4-EBP is a translational repressor in a protein synthetic pathway that in mitochondria can be responsible for building mitochondrial biogenesis components. So in a low energy situation, the appropriate signal would be to enhance the efficiency of energy exchange, and one of the ways to do that is through enhancing mitochondrial bioenergetics. And the upregulation of this translational repressor for EBP by dietary restriction protocols can explain to, you know, a significant extent the effect of a significantly enhancing the production of certain mitochondrial proteins that would be capable of overcoming an absolute energy deficit by increasing the exchange of, you know, energy for protons and building ATP molecules. So that kind of reasoning all kind of falls in line with this whole general theory that one of the principal salutary effects of these manipulations is, in fact, enhancement of energetic efficiency with respect to maintenance of body function.
Well, they were basically saying was that you restrict calories, it causes your body to produce more mitochondria and make them function better.
Yeah, in essence. Yeah. Now, again, there's a lot of sort of, you know, nuanced stuff in this that really never gets mentioned in the popular spin about this. And you know, the first thing that, you know, people have to realize is that when these people say moderate calorie restriction, well, the default in the experimental stuff is 40%. Now, semi-starvation starts at 50%. So it's somewhat, you know, I think dishonest to, you know, sort of casually say, well, you can get here with moderate calorie restriction. No, you can't. You know?
Well, is there a way then, you know, if, again, back to bodybuilding, is there a way then to design, you know, from a scientific standpoint, a diet for the bodybuilder that would give him enough food to build muscle while mitigating, you know, the deleterious effects of too much food?
Yeah, I think the target would be a diet that essentially drives anabolic, you know, function without, I mean, anabolic function is a pretty generic term. When you get fat, I mean, that's a result of anabolism and fat cells. So the fact of the matter is that a bodybuilder diet that maintains, you know, euglycemia without transient hyperglycemic spikes that are associated with the usual and customary Western diet and drives muscle mass and has very high energetic inefficiency because it's very costly to produce muscle tissue, you know, would not be expected to at least result in the typical chronic disease profile that is typical of Western culture. And really, that's what the Okinawans have, you know, demonstrated, is that their diet, irrespective of how many calories it has in it, has the right macronutrient mix to produce essentially long life in association with disease-free profiles. And that's really what I think people should be looking at as the execution target, is the maximum number of years absent disease.
Right.
I mean, if somebody lives to be 85 and from 60 to 85, they're in and out of the hospital with coronary bypasses and, you know, accruing one additional medication after another, you know, how much merit does that really have?
True.
And so the key distinction is, you know, as has been referred to in some of this literature, not lifespan, but health span. You know, the amount of time you can spend walking around on the planet as a highly functional, you know, high capacity, you know, individual.
That's not what Big Pharma wants. They want you living a long time, sick as hell, so you can take a lot of medicine.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's kind of say, I mean, the idea about health enhancement that leads to excessive lifespan is actually, you know, anathema to the actual insurance companies, because their actuarial things would go, you know, ass over tea kettle in a heartbeat if somebody came up and said, hey, I've got something, you guys can pop a pill and you can continue to eat, you know, crap and, you know, watch TV and stuff, and you can live to be 100. And, you know, if that person were out in public, you know, the insurance company would have an assassin.
Do you think if we ate the diet we did ancestrally with the modern medicine we had today, that we'd be living a lot longer and with a better quality?
Yeah, I mean, clearly if we can, you know, manage to get into the, you know, high, you know, 70 to 77 to 80 range with, you know, chronic disease, you know, pressing heavily on the healthcare budget and stuff, I think that with robust nutrition and, you know, modest exercise compliance, that, you know, people could live well into their 90s and actually be functional.
We see a few of them, you know, guys that are in their, you know, in their mid-80s that have trained and eaten healthy, you know, their whole lives are still kicking.
They're on stage competing.
It's amazing. I mean, look at Jack LaLanne. He's like 95. He's ready to pull a train with his teeth.
Well, you know, I mean, again, the issue that I think really should be the focus here is not how long you live, but, you know, your capacity throughout your lifespan. That really is the target to, you know, drill down on. And that's a dietary issue. I mean, exercise obviously will impact that. Again, it's not calories per se. It's not body fat levels per se that are underwriting these enhancements in molecular efficiency that essentially predict lifespan. It's, you know, the deleterious effects of too much dietary intake that drives the principal determinants of these problems, which are, you know, insulin and its consequences for the production of inflammatory molecules that accrue in tissue and produce structural and functional damage that's lethal.
We always like to have, you know, some functional, you know, aspect of what we talk about, you know, sort of disseminated to our listeners. So we want to ask you, Scott, what's a typical day of eating look like in your house?
Well, people may not believe this, but my wife and I actually pretty much eat exactly the same things, because we oftentimes, you know, eat together virtually all the time except when one of us is away. But we start the day with essentially a 70-gram protein ingestion that has like 6 grams of non-sugar carbohydrate. And that's so incredibly satiating that, you know, oftentimes we get busy, we don't even eat again until much later in the day. But we try at least twice a day to get this 70-gram pop of protein. So at a minimum, you know, even on a day when we have very little, you know, time to focus or are traveling and stuff like that, we get close to 200 grams of protein. And both of us eat, you know, very little carbohydrate. If we have, you know, a sandwich or something in a restaurant environment, we typically will have one that's in a wrap as opposed to any kind of, you know, high carbohydrate bread or something like that. My wife consumes, you know, salmon about 50 times a month. So basically, I would say, you know, we're part of the under and over 200 club. I think I've told Dave about that before. Yeah. That if you wanted a kind of drop dead strategy, I would say to everybody, try to get, you know, in excess of 200 grams of high quality protein a day and less than 200 grams of total carbohydrate. Now, if everybody did that and just followed those basic rules, that in and of itself has a high nutrient density profile associated with it, and you're much more likely to attain modest reductions in total ad libitum calories if you pursue a nutrient density strategy as opposed to a food pyramid strategy, for example.
Right.
and eating, you know, a variety of different foods only results in people getting fat.
Well, animal, you know, it's, you look at the animal kingdom, and you know, you never see an obese squirrel or, you know, a deer. They eat the same thing, and they all look the same.
Well, again, you know, the default macronutrient skew has always been by virtue of the fact that agricultural carbohydrates and monosaccharide sugars are man-made, you know, inventions. Mm-hmm. They did not evolve spontaneously. They were created by man. So the default has always been some variants of, you know, plant-based carbohydrate and, you know, animal or, you know, vegetable protein sources, roughly in the same ratio. I mean, there are skews that, you know, sort of are interesting to contemplate, like the South Sea Islanders that evolved on, you know, coconuts and fish.
Right, right.
But the fact of the matter is that, again, the key characteristic is the essential nutrient ingestion, not the calories.
Right. Now, one last thing, and then Dave can have you back. So I love when your blood boils. So I'm gonna give you a Dr. Scott Connolly blood boiling statement. The PSA on TV for the Corn Growers Association have just labeled a sugar is a sugar. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, back to school, you arseholes, is how I would... it basically is not true. That's, you know, absolutely not true. I mean, to say that a glucose molecule is equivalent to fructose is simply belies the fact that the person making that statement doesn't have, you know, even a clue about the essential differences between processing a fructose molecule and a glucose molecule in the human body. I mean,
how are they getting away with this? I mean, here you have this giant, you know, consortium of you know, of growers and refiners, and, you know, putting up obviously tons and tons of money to tell us, well, it's sugars. High fructose corn syrup is fine. It comes from corn. Well, so does ethanol.
Yeah, and, you know, and again, corn, if anyone has ever actually taken a look at the natural corn that, you know, was present some 8 billion eons ago, it doesn't even resemble the current. I mean, the current corn is a hybridized agricultural product. It's not a naturally occurring product. The original corn that actually was found, you know, growing in some areas of, you know, Mexico and South American stuff, it is a very tiny plant that is almost 100% fiber that is basically inedible.
Right.
It was only through genetic hybridization of that plant that, you know, the current corn exists. And, you know, this whole problem, why do they get away with it? Because the government is behind it. I mean, it never ceases to amaze me. I mean, there's some things that just absolutely leave me speechless. You know, appointing an obese woman as Surgeon General leaves me speechless. I mean, literally. I have no answer to that. Subsidizing corn to the level that the U.S. government does to ensure that virtually, you know, over 60-70% of everything that somebody buys in the supermarket is made of corn or corn derivatives is in large measure responsible for the health care problems that these people rant and rave about.
Right. Can you imagine if Scott was Surgeon General?
I would love that.
That would be great.
That's well, what you know, it actually makes an interesting point because, I mean, I don't actually understand what the Surgeon General does. I mean, this seems to be largely a ceremonial, nonsensical position.
Right.
But nonetheless, it does make a public statement that I think is absurd in the extreme. On the one hand, there's all this ranting and raving about we have to reform health care because health care costs too much. And, you know, the entire argument misses the mark 100%. I mean, they say, well, you know, we got to cut these costs and this, that, and the other thing and blah, 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 and we have to make health insurance available to everybody. Well, that argument basically misses the boat in the fact that there's a difference between insurance, which is a for-profit business based on actuarial probability assessments, and welfare, which is simply you get, you know, this benefit. So right. An insurance company for profit has to, by definition, incorporate actuarial data to determine how they get to their profit, which means they have to identify at-risk individuals. So if one component of this, you know, basically, you know, drills down to how many people in their late, you know, later stages of life are getting these chronic diseases and what's the bill associated with that, then the only appropriate thing and to maintain an insurance industry is to lower those people's actuarial risk. You know, I mean, that's pretty simple.
Logical. They don't do that, though.
And the only way to do that is to address their diet. And so what does the United States government do? They subsidize the principal product in the food supply that is responsible for the problem. And they appoint a obese woman to lead the charge for the change.
It's so horrible. It's funny, but it's true.
It's pretty pathetic.
It's terrible.
Well, Scott, it's refreshing to have someone who talks the talk and walks the walk like yourself on, and we're out of time, but we'll, of course, be having you back very shortly, and hopefully we'll be getting you in the studio within the next month once we go live, as Jimmy Pulecci likes to say.
Yeah, the next time I get on, perhaps I'll put part two on this longevity stuff by basically pointing out some of the disadvantages to, quote, caloric restriction as a default strategy. And offer some alternatives.
That'd be great.
Excellent. Yeah, because everybody thinks just cut the calories. So that's good.
Okay, guys.
Very cool.
See you soon.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com.
ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent, legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRindustries.com today.
When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
When the world crumbles around you, will you be ready to fight back? Brutal Alchemy Performance Nutrition's unique line of supplements will help you win the war in the gym. Ancient Strength is a unique blend of 3 creatine esters which will infuse you with the ancient strength needed for the battle at hand. Isolation is a pure whey protein isolate that provides 26 grams of protein in every 29 gram scoop. Attack NO2 is Brutal Alchemy's nitric oxide booster that will increase your pumps and performance. After your
harder battle in the gym, it's time for Onslaught. Brutal Alchemy's comprehensive post-workout drink, providing everything you need to suffuse your muscles, joints, and body with the components to heal, grow stronger, and return to the fray. And when it's time to conquer in the bedroom, you'll need Forged Steel, Brutal Alchemy's male enhancement product. Lead the charge to BrutalAlchemy.com to obtain the essential elements of your brutal transformation. Brutal Alchemy. It's better to be a member of the Horde than to be destroyed by it. German American Technologies. Compete harder with GAT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuse. Jet Fuse. GAT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder.
TeamGAT.com.
Who are the Iron Sirens? The heroes. Susie Curry. Adela Garcia. Jenny Lynn. Crystal Richardson. Who are the Dark Divas? Gina Aliotti as Diva X. Jen Gates as Shade. Liza Kamstra as Black Lotus. Sonia Gonzalez as Raptress. And their story is told only in Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens is a one-of-a-kind limited edition comic book series and is the brainchild of J.M. Mannion. Order your copy of Iron Sirens today before they're gone. Visit IronSirensComics.com. That's IronSirensComics.com to get your copy of Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. Iron
Sirens. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up to the minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hey, this is the Game, Triple H from the WWE. You're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by Progenix. Visit ProgenixSRG.com.
All right, I'd like to introduce our next guest who just hours ago today won the 2009 British Championships, earned his IFBB Pro card. He's probably one of the most massive and freakiest bodybuilders currently on the planet. The man I'm talking about is the man they call the King, Zach King Kong. Welcome to the show.
Hello, guys. How are you in the U.S.? And hello, Dave, and hello, John.
Congratulations, Zach.
Oh, yes, man. It's been crazy. Just been 2 hours off the stage, and I've just been stuffing my face.
what have you eaten already since you got off stage?
Oh, my God. I've eaten a full chicken, 2 half-a-pound of burgers, of fried. A full packet of Pringles, cheesecake, carrot cake, any cake you can think of.
What'd you gain, about 20 pounds already?
Well, I gotta need a wheelchair now.
Well, it was a rather convincing win. I mean, we thought Daz was going to give you some trouble, but man, your waist looks so tiny. You made such great improvements, and you know we've been watching you for a long time, Zach, and have been waiting for this day that we could finally call you a pro. And we're really, really happy for you. How was the competition itself?
Oh, this is the first time we went into a competition what was over 2 days instead of 1 day. Usually the British Championships be like morning pre-judging starting from 12 o'clock and the evening show starts from 7 o'clock and we're on stage for about 10 o'clock. So really, you only had to peak for 1 day. This time round it was pre-judging first day and the main show second day. So we had to peak for the second day. So basically, it was a new thing for me personally because I've never done it over 2 days. But looking back at it now, it worked out better for me.
Did you get harder?
Sorry?
Did you get harder the second day? You got better?
Yes. It allowed me to get harder for the second day. Basically, first day, we didn't carb up as much, but we wanted to bring in our detail in. And for the second day, we came in fuller and drier and more separation in the legs and the hands and the glutes areas. And that's where I won the show, basically. None of the guys had the striated glutes like me and hamstrings like me. And basically, my waist was non-existent this time. So as soon as I walked on stage, it was like game over, you know what I mean?
All right. You know, Zach, you're going to have a lot of new fans here in the United States pretty soon, especially when you step on over here and start competing, you know, with the pros. So we're going to try to, you know, learn a little bit about you in this interview and give you a little let you precede your arrival here to the United States. So how old are you, Zach?
Yeah, I'm 28 at the moment.
Wow, so you're still a young one there. Got a youth on your side. Now, when did you get introduced into the sport of bodybuilding? How did you decide you wanted to do this?
Basically, at first, I was a boxer. And personally, I used to do boxing, and I got injured, and I had a shoulder injury. And my physio said to me that I need to strengthen my shoulders up. So I went to the gym to strengthen up my shoulders, and I started improving, and people in the gym started noticing the muscle developments I was making, and they thought I was going to compete in the show what was coming up in 6 weeks. And basically, the owner of the gym wanted me to compete in the show, and I said, no, it's not for me, bodybuilding, wearing these thongs and oiling up. So what happened was, at the time, I was improving so well, he says to me, well, if you do this show, I'll give you free membership for the gym, because I know you can represent my gym and win the show. So I did it, and I won the show.
So I had a
free membership for the year, and then there was no looking back. I got the book for bodybuilding, and I didn't look back at the boxing. And I was just walking around, and I had walking around with these muscles, and I thought, wow, this is what I want to do. And I was watching movies like, you know, Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger and the Rocky movies, and I was impressed by these guys' physique. Not in a gay way, but, you know, I just thought, this is the way a man should be looking. Muscle, huge, massive, you know what I mean?
So
from there was no looking back, and then I entered my next show at the age of 21. I won that. Then after that, basically, I started realizing how important the dieting was, because usually I just used to diet for 4 weeks, just cut out my junk food and just carry on eating normal things, because I had a fast metabolism due to boxing. So really, I kept in my sauces, I kept in my salt, I kept in my sugars. And I was still losing fat, but that was due to me doing so much cardio and running and circuit training. So after that, I realized there's more to this game. There's more of a science, and then you find out about the supplementation side of it and all the other aspect side of it, and it just opens up a can of worms, and then you're thinking, what the hell's going on?
Oh man. You became enlightened.
It's more complicated than you think.
Yeah, oh yeah, we know all about it. Now, the last person to get a free membership to a gym in exchange for him competing was Ronnie Coleman, so you're in good company. Ronnie got a free gym membership, and look where he wound up, so...
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, people like Ronnie Coleman, that's the people who I looked up to.
Right.
Now, and like I said, at the moment now, like Jake Cutler winning the title has brought the sport back to a better limelight. It's more mainstream. It's slimmed down. He's not chasing Ronnie Coleman no more, and he brought in the better package.
Right. Now, people.
So I think the sport's going into the right direction.
Yeah,
I agree. Now, people are on our message boards on the RX Muscle forums cannot stop talking about all the freaky proportions you have. Give us an idea of how tall you are, what you weighed on stage, and like what your what's some of your measurements are, like your arm size, your leg size, calves.
Yeah, basically at the moment, let's say I'm 5'11". Today at the show, I weighed 117.7 kilo. So that's in English, that's about 18.5 stone. Just
about 250.
And my biceps are 24 inches.
Wow!
And
my
waist is 31 inches today.
31 inches? Wow!
Yeah, my waist was And I don't know about my thighs. I don't know about my thighs at the moment.
What about your calves?
My calves are 20 inches. Wow. That's my weakest point. My calves at the moment. I really want to bring them up. It's not the size of them; it's the shape.
Yeah. Well, you were 257.4 pounds.
It's almost 260.
How much I was there? At the moment, this is like the lightest I've been at the British stage, because we want to really bring down the body weight and bring out the conditioning, because usually I've always been about 10 to 12 pounds too heavy and lost the conditioning a bit. So this time around, we worked on bringing out the conditioning and bringing out the fuller muscle bellies. And it's like you said, like bodybuilding is an illusion. So
yeah,
if you've got the right conditioning, you look bigger on stage.
Conditioning wins shows,
Look at Phil Heath. Like, basically, he weighs about 20 pounds less than Jay Cutler and Warwick Dexter Jackson, and they still stand up against him, stack up well. So it's all an illusion, isn't it?
Sure. Now, do you? Yeah. Somebody told me you train now. You train at Dorian Yates' Temple Gym. Is that true?
I used to train at Dorian Yates. But now I'm training at I train at Neil Hill gym as well. He helped me out with the preparation.
Neil Hill does Flex Lewis's.
He works with Flex Lewis.
Right.
So basically, I needed somebody to get my nutrition side right.
Now, what kind of training do? You train high intensity like Dorian, or are you more of a volume guy, or do you switch it up? What's your training like? What's your training like? Do you train high intensity like Dorian, or do you train more volume, or do you switch it up?
Before I used to train more high intensity like Dorian. Just used to go into the gym and lift heavy compound movements to like 6 to 8 reps into failure and just give it all what I got. But then when Neil had a look at me, he says to me, You're losing the separation in your muscles, so you need to do a bit of volume training as well. So I started cycling my training. So this week I did a heavy compound movement. Then volume training. And the week after, I did a bit of both. So he's like incorporated his own training technique called YT3. So basically, we cycle our training every 3 weeks.
Gotcha.
So basically, we're hitting muscle from different angles, and so we're contracting the muscle from different angles as well, so we can get more isolation into the muscle with certain exercises in your weak body parts, and really like bring out the details. Like if you look at my quads in the picture this year, the detail looks so deeper compared to before, and that is from really like changing my training techniques around. Because don't get me wrong, Dorian's training is great, but the thing is, it's a good foundation, but then you got to look at your physique and think to yourself, do I still need more mass, or do I need more detail? And that's what you need to assess on your physique and bring that in, don't you? And because if a person is more conditioned and got more better lines, then he will look better than a person, like you said, who's big, blocky, and has got not much detail.
Don't you think, though, that a lot of your detail came out because your conditioning came in much better?
As well, because I brought my body fat down as well. But if you looked at my show, what I did 4 weeks ago, the qualifier,
right.
I didn't have the separation and the detail until I started doing the really heavy volume training and really contracting out, pausing as well, and squeezing my muscle fibers.
Right.
It got to the point where, my legs look so smooth for the Welsh Championships. But people saying to me, he's not conditioned, he's not going to be ready for the British in time. Me and my nutritionist said, he told me, I promise you, wait till the British, everything will be conditioned and everything will be right. Like, I think, you know, sometimes it just takes a bit longer for certain people to lose body fat in certain areas and bring in more detail in certain areas.
Sure. Now, are you Welsh?
Sorry?
I'm sorry. Finish what you said.
Like I said, people hold fat in different areas, and they lose fat in different areas quicker than other places. Like for me, I lose fat around my stomach, abdominal area, last, because I had a hernia operation this year, and I was out of training for 3 months, and I was on a back pedal to start off with. I wasn't even thinking about competing this year. I thought, you know what, I've had 3 months of training, I'm down to 18 stones, and I'm holding about 8 to 10% body fat, and basically, do I think I can pull it around? And basically, that rest did me good,
right.
Because I came back bigger and stronger within a couple of months. My body went up to 20 stone, and I was 5% body fat.
Now, how much is a stone?
The stone is about 14 pounds. Sorry about that, because here in the UK we work in stone.
No, we just wanted to try to get a conversion going. So it's about 14 pounds?
Yes, a stone is 14 pounds, yes.
Okay. Now, Zach, are you Welsh?
No. The reason I did the Welsh Championships was because I had to qualify for the British Championship.
Oh, okay.
So it's like in America doing like a Tampa Pro, the New York show, to qualify for
right.
Olympia.
Gotcha.
So that's what I had to do to qualify for the British this
gotcha.
Year. Because last year I had a bad year and I didn't make the top two. And for that reason, I had to do a qualifier, because usually the top two get a bye for the next year's British Championships.
Right. Well, what were some of the bodybuilders growing up that inspired you, Zach? Well, what physiques do you look at and say to yourself, wow, that's I want to look like that, or that guy impresses me?
Basically, from the beginning, it's always been Dorian, for his mind and mental power and his training style and his focus. Like, you know, the person, a bum could be going around in the gym and he was so focused and he did what he had to do in the gym. He was like, basically, he was a working man's bodybuilder, where he didn't make excuses, he did what he had to do. And he basically hid his way for 12 months of the year and just did what he had to do, then turn up for the Olympia and kick everybody's ass. But then I look at people's physique who I want to look like. And basically, it's guys like, you know, Flex Wheeler, Sean Ray, Kevin Levron, you know, the aesthetic
sure.
physiques. The guys with the symmetry and the lines and everything. So I look at people like that. But like I said, then I look at people who are like freaks, who have got that conditioning, who've got stupid conditioning, like Andre Munzer, who got that stupid conditioning like you had when you were competing. Mm. Fucking the vascularity and your skin was just like paper.
Sure.
You don't see that much on the stage no more. And I don't know the reason why people don't see that no more. I just think it comes down to people are not dieting hard enough, or they're too scared to come in smaller and feel like they're coming in smaller and not burn that extra body fat what they need to burn.
You sure. said it perfectly. People are not willing to suffer. They don't want to go to that pain zone. They're afraid they're going to lose muscle, and then they use that as an excuse, I believe.
Yeah, because for me, I was 2 weeks out from the show, and I was weighing 19 stone, and I said to my trainer, I think I'm ready now. He just looks at me and he says to me, no, you got another 8 pounds to lose. I went, you what? He goes, yeah, you got another 8 pounds to lose. I thought the hard work had been done. He goes, no, this is where it starts now. This is what's going to win you the show. You've got to come in so down. You've got to come in so depleted so we can carb you up fully. If you don't deplete enough, we will not able to carb you up properly, and you won't look tight. You won't have that muscle fullness.
Right. Zach, what's the bodybuilding scene like over there in the UK? Do you guys pay a lot of attention to us over here, or is it sort of like your own independent universe over there?
You know, at the moment, the bodybuilding scene is like it's like the Twilight Zone, basically, where you walk in the general public. They don't understand it. They look at you and they think to themselves like, oh, it's all steroids or it's all this and all that. And you don't realize, you appreciate it. I've been to America and it's more what's accepted in America. I think due to the fact that people in America, there's more sports going on, like American football, and there's a lot more bigger guys, and it's more widely accepted. I don't know the reason behind it, but it just seems like here in the UK, if you're a bodybuilder, straight away they assume you got a drug abuser sometime.
Zach, I have a question for you, because lately there's been a lot of freaky-looking bodybuilders coming out of the UK. We got John Hodgson, Lee Powell, who did real great in the under 202 class this year. Obviously, they work with Neil Hill as well as you do. The guy who finished fourth in this British Championships, Daz Ball, would look pretty insane looking as well. I mean, this guy's got some freaky ass muscle. What are you guys eating over there? How are you guys getting so big all of a sudden?
I think, you know what it is at the moment happening. You know, this is the first year where everybody has upped the game. Everybody has come in condition, and it's not one of them shows where, you know, you look at the contenders and think, you know what, he's first, he's second, and there's a big gap, and that's third, fourth, and fifth. This time around, everybody upped the game. They all came in condition, and they all came freaky. And I'm thinking, you know what it is? It's all about they're all hungry. They all want to make it big. They all want to be pros. They all want to live. You know, they all see people like Phil Heath. You know, the young people coming into the sport and thinking, you know what, if these guys can do it, why can't we do it? And they all want to live that bodybuilding dream where they want to move to America and watch it, and I think it's going to make a difference. For me personally, it's always been a dream to be a pro, but I know all that glitter ain't gold. So I'm a realistic, you know what I mean? End of the day, I might never step on the Olympic stage. I might never win a pro show. But at least one thing I know is that my goal first was to win the British and get my pro card. I've done that now. So now I can look at doing a pro show and seeing how I do as a pro. It's no point thinking to yourself, you know what, oh yeah, I'm a pro now, I'm a superstar now, the money's going to come rolling in, this is going to happen for me, that's going to happen for me. Nothing's going to happen if you don't know how to market yourself in this game.
Right.
So you got to be prepared to, you know, suffer and make an effort and talk to people and make the doors open for you.
Well, you're doing the first great thing right now by being on our show, Zach.
Like I said to you, man, your guys, watching, I've been following you for ages. You've been on MD, you did a great job there. Now you've got your own show and you've got your own website, RX Muscle. It's doing great, and I'm definitely going to like register on it and basically contribute to your webpage. Yeah. and answer some of the questions that the fans want answering from me.
Oh, they basically love you.
This is what it's all about now, is giving back to the fans. And basically, I'm coming to America in 2 weeks' time. I'm doing a small tour with New Trex, where the suppliers want me to promote their product, Hemo Rage. So I will be in New York, Florida, Miami, and Texas. So hopefully I'll get to meet a lot of people, a lot of the fans out there, and hopefully I can contribute to them and give them some of my insight and knowledge what I can help them out with.
They'll love you on our side, Zach. They've been talking about you for a long time. So when you're in New York, you have to let us know so we can come and get you get some pictures of you and hang out with the Whack Pack for a
night. Like I said, you are based in New York, aren't you?
Yes.
Are you based in New York?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So when I'm in New York, basically I'll find out the dates next week when I'm in New York. And when I'm in New York, what we can do is basically you can come down or we can meet up and we can set up a proper interview and we can have a good chat face to face.
Sure, definitely. Yeah.
That would be a great thing. And basically, like I said, in this sport, anything is helpful. You know what I mean? Basically, you're a very knowledgeable guy, John. And basically, what's it now? You're doing well with all your athletes and everybody. So, what's it now? We can always talk and stuff like that. And basically, at the moment, with Neil Hill, he's been great, and we've been doing the what's it now? He's brought my body weight down and he brought me the condition I needed to bring, and I can't give him enough credit to the guy, because I've got to really say we had a lot of pressure on our shoulders this year. And we really did have to pull out the stops, you know what I mean?
Well, what did you do to pull them out? You've been criticized in the past for your conditioning or lack of. What kind of diet did you follow, you know, leading up to the show?
Basically, with Neil, his diet is a variety of everything. Basically, my diet, I was eating fruit, I was eating fish, I was eating beef, I was eating chicken. For carbs, I was having pasta, I was having oats, I was having a variety of everything. So basically, there was nothing, I was lacking in my diet. I was having everything. So it was a complete range of protein, carbohydrates from different sources. It didn't even feel like I was dieting for the first 8 weeks, until really when my body weight really started dropping. That's when it really bloody hit me, and that's when my energy levels were really low and I felt like I was dieting. But I'd rather feel cranky for 4 weeks than 12 weeks.
Obviously, definitely. Now, have you ever thought about moving to the United States, or are you going to stay in England?
Basically, at the moment, just going to see what happens, and basically don't know what the future holds for me. I would love to move to the States and be in there with everyone, and basically you got to be in it to win it in this sport. And being in the States will help my profile a lot more. So if I have the opportunity to come up there, then basically hopefully I will. So if anybody's got a spare bedroom, then I'll call them.
I got a spare bedroom, but I can't feed you. I think you'll put me out of, I'll be broke.
I might have to do a QI green.
You gotta bring your own food. Yeah, you gotta bring your own food. You can stay in the bedroom though.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I have to clean my bedroom. I won't keep it messy with all them paintings.
Zach, what do you do when you're not bodybuilding? Do you have, you know, an interest, a job, a career? Are you, what kind of real person are you?
Basically, I own a gym in the UK. What's running okay? Basically, it's a hardcore gym, so I cater for powerlifters and bodybuilders, and I do some personal training as well. So that's running okay. But also, as well as that, I work part time for the Department of Work and Pension, where I'm an advisor for people who are unemployed and looking for vacancies. So basically, my job entails a company contacting me and saying we're looking for 30 people who are packers, and basically my job is to sieve them out and interview them and make sure they're the right candidates for the company. So cool. I do that part time as well, so it's not too bad.
Now, when are we going to see you? Have you and Neil Hill decided when you're going to get on stage, on the pro stage, that is, and compete again?
Basically, you're going to see me next year. So basically, I'm not going to be one of them amateurs where I'm going to take a year off training, year off competing, I mean, and wait to put more size on and stuff like that. I know that sometimes, you know, when you take a year off, you lose focus of what you want, basically. I've seen guys take 1 year off, 2 years off, and they don't look no better for it.
No.
I think to myself, basically, you got to at least compete once a year and have something in focus, because most of the time, you grow when you're focused, when you're eating right on time, and you're training on time, and that is mainly when you're dieting. So if you're not, if you haven't got a show in mind, you're going to think, you know what, I can eat an hour later today. I can do this later. I can slack on this. I can slack on my training. And what ends up happening is you just wasted a year.
You're right. Now, so do you think we'll see you in New York Pro, maybe?
Well, definitely. I think that is one of the shows I'm looking forward to doing. So I've got a lot of emails from fans there. So, guys, watch the space. That's what I can say.
Well, you got to let us know when you're in New York because we're going to definitely hook up. We'll take you out to dinner. Our treat on that one. And we'll do a couple interviews and some training stuff with you.
Definitely. Like I said, we can do like a video or anything like that you want to do.
We'll do some in the Iron Asylum training with you, definitely, without a doubt.
Yeah. Basically, if you have a look at my promotion DVD, you'll see the type of training I do. I can shift some poundages for a small boy.
Yeah, you're a real small boy.
A little guy.
Yeah, a little guy. He's about as little as King Kong.
I might have been a Ronnie Coleman, but I can shift some poundages.
What before we let you go, what's your best like lifts? What's your best bench, squat, deadlift?
I've done 600 pounds on bench press. I've done 750 pounds on deadlift. I've done squats 600 pounds. I've done dumbbell curl 100 pounds. Incline 500 pounds.
Holy moly!
This is going to be a good video.
You might have to get into that strength liftoff next year between Johnny Jackson and Ben White and then Stan Efferding.
You never know. If them guys keep talking smack, I might have to come around quietly and show them off.
Yeah, now you're a pro now. You're qualified. You can smack them down right all the way over there from overseas.
I think I'll have to have my spinach first because they're strong mofo.
Zach, enjoy your victory. I really appreciate you calling in. I know you just got off the stage a few hours ago. And
like I said, before end of the day, I'm more than happy to do this for you guys. And like I said, you know, I love to give back to the sport now because the fans, this is what they deserve. End of the day, if this is gonna help the guys to get into bodybuilding or appreciate the sport in the UK and feel like what I'm going through at the moment, like I said, it's just crazy because it's not even sunk in. I don't feel like I'm a pro because I've looked up to these guys so long, and once somebody says to you you're a pro and you can compete with these guys, you're just thinking, hell no, these guys are just monsters. You know what I mean? so maybe David has to chop up Goliath now.
Yeah. I don't know. You're a pro. So you enjoy it and understand that you're going to be up on stage next year with these guys that you've been reading about in the magazines.
Just remember one thing and tell the fans, it's been 2 hours since I got my pro card and I still made time and effort to do this interview, okay? So I am a down to earth guy.
Yeah, you are. Thanks, Zach, and enjoy your victory, and I'm sure the fans are going to love this special, and we look forward to you posting on the boards.
Before we go, I'd like to thank Nutrex for helping me and my friends and family, and definitely Neil Hill for being by my side through this diet and bringing in the best package for me. And I'd like to thank your guys, you and John, for interviewing me and giving me this time, and I appreciate this, guys, because you're the first guys to interview me as a pro, so that goes down as something, okay?
That's history, man. That's history right there. We appreciate it very much, Zach.
No problem, John, and I hope to speak to you soon, and I hope the show and the website goes from strength to strength because you are doing a good job for the bodybuilding community, and I look forward to contributing to your website, okay?
As soon as you can, get on there and start posting.
Okay, no problem, John.
Right, don't eat too much. Don't wind up in a hospital tonight.
Okay, see you later.
Wow, John, this guy is going to be some star in the IFBB. I don't think I need to predict it because it's pretty obvious. He's got a 31-inch waist. He's got 24-inch arms. His calves are his worst body part at 20 inches.
He's Rico McTaco.
He is. That's what he looks like. He looks like that Rico McTaco character that he used to write about.
That's what I was envisioning, something like him. And, what a nice guy. Yeah. This guy 2 hours ago was on stage, and I knew he was going to win. So that's why we got in touch with him and set this up. And I'm really glad that, we were able to get this interview in, because this guy's going to get picked up and signed, and we'll never be able to talk to him again.
the phone is ringing probably right now. But, he is a down-to-earth guy. He obviously loves RX Muscle. He likes the hardcore aspect of the sport. He embraced it. And he's a strong motherfucker, too. I didn't realize he had those kind of lifts.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him going up against Johnny Jackson and Stan Efferding next year and Ben White? This guy could shock the whole world.
Yeah, he could.
He could be the next Ronnie Coleman, seriously, because we've been waiting for a freaky guy like this to come along. And not only does he have the size, the mass, the symmetry, but the guy's also got strength to go with it. Right. I mean, he's the he's the guy that we thought didn't exist,
Yeah. He's a cross between Dorian and Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah.
And he's not that. He was 5'11". He's
only 28 years old.
The guy's got a bright, bright future ahead of him.
This could be we could be talking to a future Mr. Olympia right now.
Yep. I think we could be.
And probably, the truth of the matter is, the best bet for him would be to stay in England. I'd love to see him come to the United States, obviously, and he'd probably make a lot more money here. But if he stays over there, the focus he'll have over there, he'll probably...
His own gym.
Yeah, he'll probably be Mr. Olympia if he's over there.
So Dorian did. He stayed there.
Dorian was smart. He came over here now after he's done competing, because it's too distracting over here.
Yeah, you know what? We'll bring him over to Bev's, and he'll remember that as Dorian's favorite place to train when he was here. And, we got to bring him to Apollon Gym in New Jersey, and everybody's going to be happy.
Pollen Gym.
Apollon Gym. Apollon to Pollen, whatever it is. You know what I mean?
We got to take him out to eat. I want to see what this guy eats. I'm going to take him to the sushi buffet.
No, we got to take him to the Brazilian place where they slice the steak off the sword.
That might be even more fun with
Radizio.
Him. Yeah, Radizio. Yeah. The last time I ate there with Blackman, we had so much meat. I think Steve was like constipated for like 6 weeks after that.
Well, that's normal.
Well, of course, I took about 14 servings of fiber after that.
He's another one of those guys that goes like once a week.
Yeah, well, he doesn't believe in fiber. You know that.
Yeah.
But
what bodybuilder takes fiber?
I got to just say one thing about Scott Conley, because, this guy is, he's really my hero in the sport, Right. Everyone says, oh, Ronnie Coleman's my hero. Scott Conley's my hero, because this guy is just like the only person that personally I could look up to and say, I don't know as much as him, And it really impresses me that the guy is so, when I listen to him talk about like protein synthesis and translation and transcription, and he speaks about it so eloquently that, I can just kind of run the wheels in my head and understand what he's saying. They really should make this guy the Surgeon General.
Yeah, they should.
If the government ever had any wisdom about wanting to really make us healthier and live longer and be a more astute nation, not a bunch of people that are being... have the wool pulled over our eyes, they would make Scott Conley the Surgeon General.
Yeah.
And you know what? He'd change everything.
He would. And I don't even think anybody even comprehends the complexity of the amount of the complexity and the volume of knowledge that's in his brain that he calls from so readily. I mean, I remember working as in a sports medicine office, and the doctor there had the metabolic pathways on a board and a big poster. It was the size of a sheet of plywood. It was 4 feet high, 8 feet long, and in 4-point font. And it was the most complicated, insane thing. And I had the pyruvate, the Krebs cycle, all that crap in there. All the pathways of everything in your metabolism. And Scott knows this stuff off the top of his head.
Well, I mean, this is what he does for a living. But he could eloquently extrapolated, and if you listen, he's not complicated the way he speaks. He's giving a tremendous amount of information when he speaks, right. However. But my point is that he gets it. He gets it, the bottom line. He cuts through the bullshit. He has solutions to the problems that this country is supposedly looking for, yet no one wants to hear what he's saying.
Right.
It's so stupid. Give this guy the Surgeon General's position and let him change the food pyramid and get rid of it.
Right.
Let him tell people to stop eating sugar. Let him tell them that high fructose corn syrup is killing the kids of this country and then obviously into adulthood. I'm telling you, he's the vehicle for change. If we really want to fix the healthcare system in this country,
he'll get assassinated.
Without a doubt.
Yep.
Well, the government might kill him themselves, but that's why they'll never even elect him to begin with. You know, that's the problem. But you know what? I'm excited. He's got this new book coming out. I can't wait till they finally release it. You know, with the economy, the publishers are holding it back, but it's going to really blow up. And that whole Progenics line of products that he has is going to basically grow into a much greater, more comprehensive, bunch of supplements, and it's going to basically embrace all his dieting philosophies and all the philosophies that he's going to have in this book. So I'm super excited about it. These are the things I look forward to, John, in life.
Yeah.
Most people look forward to what the next thing they're going to eat for dinner is, or the new car they're going to get. I look forward to Connolly's new book coming out. Oh.
I do too, but I also look forward to what I'm going to eat and what I'm going
to
drive.
Well, you also look forward though to the newest stimulant supplement coming out by ALR, because Arthur has always got some new one on the horizon. I know Poison is the newest one out there, but Sean Andros is, I think, waiting for the next big thing from him. I think we got to find out maybe next week.
I think he's ruined himself with this Poison, because I can't imagine making a better one. It's potent. It does what it's supposed to do. You know, I always had this issue about eating, you know, when you're not necessarily dieting, but just kind of like watching what you eat, which is what I mostly all the time do. I have my intervals in my meals, and you know, that's when I eat. I find myself walking around if I'm, you know, in the house or I'm working, I can't get up, if I'm frustrated or whatever, I'm looking for something to eat. This stuff eliminates that appetite that sort of boredom appetite, I call it. You just don't do it.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
Well, you know, any kind of stimulant, strong stimulant, will have appetite suppressive effects. That's why sometimes I recommend, if you're trying to gain weight, not to go too crazy with the stimulants. However, if you're a junkie like Sean Andros is, man, Arthur is like the god of gods, when it comes to keeping you awake all day. So we're going to have him, I think, either on next week or the week after. So
yeah, we got to get him back on because he's got some new stuff going on.
He's got some new stuff coming up. Other than that, there's nothing really else to report. You know, we're on a slightly off week. I call it off week only because we didn't have to get into an airplane and travel anywhere. There was plenty of shows though that were around. All the results are up at rxmuscle.com. Guys, we have so much stuff we're putting up on a daily basis. Also, don't forget, November 13th, Friday the 13th, that is, we are going to have the $1,000 battle of the biceps between Jeff the producer, Mike Liberatore, bros versus the pros. That's going to be an exciting event. Obviously, the Eastern USA will follow the day after. Next week, we're off, but the following week, John, we're going to be in Boston for the Jay Cutler New England Championships there, and there's a whole bunch of great stuff going on. We also have a haunted house. We're going to be going out to, what is that, Sweet Hollow Road?
See the ghosts.
To see the ghosts out here on Long Island, and we're going to video that whole thing and put it together for you guys. So we've got a lot of good stuff happening. But for now, John, we're out of time as usual. I'd like to thank our guests, Zach King Kong, and of course, Dr. Scott Connolly, for stopping by. Until next week, remember, with Heavy Muscle Radio, the truth hurts.
Heavy Muscle Radio is a presentation of RxMuscle.com, the truth in bodybuilding. Tune in next week at this same time for another round with Dave Palumbo and John Romano, only on Heavy Muscle Radio.